Hello and welcome to another Open Geodata podcast. In this podcast, we're talking to Jeff Cross, who works at Geospatial Vision Limited, which is a company in Oxford. They're doing innovative things to process video data recorded by their van as it drives around the UK, things like Amazon's Mechanical Turk.
And the idea really is to try and use some of this background computer vision technology in the GIS world. Mm-hmm. The asset databasing was one obvious need that every council in the UK is now required to start looking at building up databases of asset of their assets for budgeting and various other accountability. And what do they call it? Transparent government or something like that.
Right.
Where they're required to sort of actually appear more transparent and show why they, when they submit their budget requirements to central government, they're required to be able to say how many stop signs they have and how many drain pipes they have, and then also if there's a car accident and they're being sued because the driver says, well, there wasn't a no entry sign there, they'd like to be able to go back and say, well, actually it was in our database, it was there.
Yeah.
So it's actually a remarkably big market. We probably, the UK has one of the most organised road systems in the world, but the same sort of thing is going on in America and the continental Europe, and it's sort of spreading. It's kind of one of those things that once you've sorted out your economy and everything else, then you start to worry about counting how many street signs you've got.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the sort of thing that a third world country is very likely to do in the near future, but it's certainly something that all first world countries are moving towards. So the idea was really, can we just take a van, drive it down the road, gather these databases? Currently, the councils are paying guy with a little GPS, handheld GPS, to walk down the street.
To literally walk down?
Literally walk down the street. Well, it's expensive because it's obviously very slow, but it's also remarkably unreliable. Their biggest complaint was that they would get one guy to walk down and they'd get another one to do it the next year, and their databases just didn't correlate at all. They had no way of actually matching up. The GPS wasn't that accurate, but more important, it just wasn't very reliable. He would miss things, and he would misregister things, and it was just generally a very unreliable process. It also turned out to be one of the most dangerous occupations in the UK,
right?
Because these guys were being run over. So that was really the people that we're trying to compete with. So we've built a van, and we have cameras all over the van. We're currently in the process of driving the UK.
What, the whole UK?
Well, that's ultimately the aim, yeah. Right. Our aim is to drive as we get contracts. So at the moment we're working on one particular contract, and so we'll be driving that council. So one council will say, can you drive all of our A roads and give us an asset database for all our A roads? So we'll do that. Our aim is to try and do the whole UK through contracts. But at the same time as gathering the data for the councils, we're also gathering all sorts of other data, which we can use for things like, well, I mean, I'm sure you can imagine people like Navtech would love that data. The trouble with Navtech is that they have to go and drive every road as well.
Yeah.
We're effectively being paid to drive every road by other people.
Yeah.
Because of the costs that the councils pay us to gather the databases is already way beyond how much it costs to drive the van, obviously.
I can see that being a problem, doing literally every road in a van, because 3-point turns at every little close.
We've only really had the van out for 6 months, of which a large portion of that was been testing, playing around. At the moment, we'll probably be doing mostly A, Bs and Cs. We're unlikely to be going down every little close initially, because the councils are probably don't care that much about those. But if someone came to us and gave us a contract to do every little close in Oxfordshire, we would do it. And
in a van?
Well, we would probably equip a smaller car. It's not difficult to slap a few cameras onto a car.
Well, no, even a car, I think the fundamental thing is it's four-wheeled rather than two.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it's a motorcycle, or if that's what you're getting at. I suppose the problem there is...
It's the problem we have when we're mapping, because we have to do essentially the same thing, go down every little close, and we find it extremely slow by car, but very, very quick for cycling.
Yes, I mean, one of the answers is that we haven't tried, and you probably have more experience than us in that. We haven't tried going down every single place. Certainly Navtech do. They have no other way of gathering that data, so they drive their cars into every road, mm-hmm. and then reverse out or whatever. It's unlikely that particularly for our business, it's unlikely that we're going to be required to gather data on roads that aren't navigable by a car. Have you ever heard of the UK PMS?
No.
Pavement Management System, which is the sort of standard that the councils are required to conform to in terms of the data that they keep about their roads. It doesn't count for cycle tracks and farm lanes and things like that. So any road that we couldn't get a car down, it's very unlikely that we're going to have to drive.
Yeah.
But you're right, it might be that it's impractical if we got a contract to do tiny, tiny roads. It would be impractical to have a four-wheel vehicle. I just don't know. I'm just thinking about Oxford, and I think I can't imagine there's that much area of Oxford that couldn't be done with a car.
No, it is. Obviously, you can do it with a car. It's just a question of speed.
Yeah.
It is so much quicker.
Expensive. I mean, I'm just not sure that there's even that many dead ends in...
There are. Believe me.
Really? Yeah.
We spend maybe 90 or 95% of our time in dead ends. As soon as you get out in the home counties, every little housing estate is designed to be little quiet corners.
Yeah.
So it's almost like a space-filling curve.
You're probably right. And there's only really two answers to that. One is a bicycle, or the other one is we say we can't go down those tracks, and they have to be done by walking. If there are actually any assets down there that the councils care about.
Well, that's the other thing. There might not be, right?
There might not be, although there's probably streetlights, and that's one of their biggest...
Oh, really?
That's one of the things that they care the most about.
So they don't know where their streetlights are?
They don't know where their streetlights are. They don't even know how many they are. And one of their biggest requirements, as far as this database goes, is that they have to declare, in order to pay their electricity bill, they have to declare how many streetlights they have.
Okay.
To the electricity board, and basically just pay some figure that's made up, and they pretty much make up the number. They've got a vague idea, but it's not very accurate. And if they can really get an accurate database, then they're probably overestimating at the moment, because they don't want to risk being caught out. So it is something they're very interested in. It's also something that they have a large sort of liability issues with. If a street light falls down, it can hurt someone.
Yeah.
So they're required to keep careful tabs on those. They're also electrical, which if someone's sort of fiddled around with it, then they need to know. So streetlights is actually one of the ones that they're most interested in. And also just manholes. Those can appear anywhere. So our aim isn't really... Your aim is to sort of generate centre lines for every road. Our aim is slightly different from that. We don't really care that much about the centre line, because any council that doesn't know that is pretty dire. So centre lines are probably not that important to them, but if there is a manhole cover down the end of your close, then they're going to want that manhole cover. So we will have to either take the van, or it could also be, everything we're doing could be a handheld camera in theory, so it could be on a cycle. There's some slight issues with a bicycle, and one of the issues
is power,
and we have GPS is not quite accurate enough for a lot of what we're doing.
Right.
Because they care about sub-meter accuracy.
Mm-hmm.
They want to look at this data on top of master map and see that it lines up properly.
Right.
So GPS is probably not quite there. So our van's got an inertia unit on board, which augments the GPS, and then we've got differential GPS on top of that. So that's probably not so good for a bicycle. Maybe in the future we can do that.
And then you drive around and you've got this video footage.
Yes. So then the story gets complicated. So that's so the idea is drive a van down the road, gather video footage. These are all videos. If you've played around on our website, these are all videos that you've probably seen, but I'm going to show them to you anyway.
These are demos from geosolutions.co.uk.
Yeah. So then after you've done that, we use our vision sort of Buju 2D3 type stuff to do camera tracking. And so that means really just augmenting, well, first of all, computing the orientation of the cameras, because the GPS doesn't give you that.
Right.
But then also augmenting the GPS using the motion of the cameras. What you've got here is we're basically just taking points in the image and following them and tracking them. It's fairly standard stuff.
Does it take a lot of processing power to do this?
It's relatively significant, yeah.
I mean, per frame?
Per frame, no, but there's a lot of frames.
Well, I'm just trying to... If you've got an hour of footage, does it take an hour to process? Or does it take days or weeks?
No, our aim is we have the van out for 8 hours a day and we have to get all the processing done before the van goes out the next day.
Right.
So we've got a third of real time, really, is our limit. If it's anything that's slower than that, we can't do it because it won't be ready for the next time the van goes out.
How do you get the data off the van?
Hard drives.
Really?
Big hard drives. What have we got now? We've got about 30 terabytes of storage hanging around, and it's growing at a rate of about a terabyte a month.
Right.
A lot of data.
So you archive all of this, right?
We archive the purpose is to build up this database, A, of video footage, and B, of mapping theirs. That's the long-term aim, is once you've got this video footage, you can extract manhole covers, and that might be interesting to one person, but to another person, they might be interested in just centre line of the road.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've got the footage, and we can relatively easily write algorithms to then extract the extra data out of the video footage,
mm-hmm.
and then just run it off and go and have a cup of coffee and come back, and it's done.
Right.
It's not quite real time, but it's designed to be scalable as well. So we're actually about to scale onto Amazon Elastic Cloud, because that way we can scale infinitely. I assume you know what Elastic Cloud
is. Does it make a particular difference that EC2 is in the States and the dollar's been dropping?
No. Not really.
Really?
I mean, it will reduce the price. But in fact, if you do the sums on Elastic Cloud, it's not as it's not that cheap.
Really?
It is. I mean, obviously, they've done their sums carefully. And if you work out how much it would cost you to buy computers and just shove them into a server room and replace them every 2 years, it's about the same as using one of the Elastic Cloud machines.
Well, the idea is you can scale up and down, right?
The idea is you can scale up and down. Whether that's useful to us, at the moment it is, because at the moment we'd like to scale up from naught to large number very quickly.
Yeah.
But in the long term, I'm not sure the Elastic Cloud is really that efficient for us.
Well, how about their storage stuff?
We've already made a decision not to go with their storage, because it's once you factor in the bandwidth costs, it's not efficient for us at all.
Because you're doing lots of read and writes then?
Sorry?
You're doing lots of
reason rights. Well, we have the van come in every day with a few gigabytes of data. Well, it just doesn't... Storage is too easy for us to just buy in storage. It's so cheap to build up a storage farm, and that's what we've been doing.
Right.
Elastic Cloud is nice because it does allow us to scale very fast to a large number of machines, and it's not something that we want to do right now. If I had to predict, I would say that probably in a couple of years we're not going to be on Elastic Cloud. I don't think it will be efficient to do so. Mechanical Turk again, I don't know whether that will scale in the long term, or whether it's something...
Simply that, because of the number of people?
Yeah, I mean, at the moment we've got one van on the road, we're aiming to have probably three or four within the next year. Whether we can get enough people on Amazon Turk to really process that amount of data, I don't know.
What are you using Mechanical Turk for?
We're using it for, at the moment, some of the assets that we can't do automatically, like manholes and gullies. That's just something we haven't got automatic algorithms for. We hope to in the near future. It's really just a sort of stopgap until we've got our own automatic algorithms, and then we'll go to automatic.
Really?
Hopefully, yeah. That's the aim, is everything will be automatic in
some number of
years. although I think we'll probably have more requirements come along as time goes on. So I think our need for Mechanical Turk will probably stay there.
So you've got this van going along, and it knows where it is,
yep.
and it knows how fast it's going, yep. and it knows which direction it's going.
Yep.
And then you can figure out the orientation of the camera from some of this,
yep.
because you know where the camera's looking and how its field is changing as it's going past. And then you've got these people on Mechanical Turk being given 10 cents for 50 frames to show where manholes are.
Yep.
And then you plug it all through and then automatically get the latitude and longitude of the manhole.
Yeah. So once we get the results back from Mechanical Turk, and actually we have a completely automated pipeline, so the data comes in at the end of the day, and someone carries a hard drive in and shoves it into the machine, and that's the last manual step.
And that's it.
And that's it.
It's like Jurassic Park, everything's automated.
Yes. In theory, that's the theory. But in theory, everything really is completely automated from that point onwards. The data comes off. First step is this sort of thing, so camera tracking, so augmenting the GPS with some video data and video tracking. And then the next step is the automated steps. So as you've probably seen from our website, we've got some sign detection, which works pretty well. So all those automated steps get run already. And then there's the Mechanical Turk steps, and at the moment we're treating those as automated, so they sort of get run off automatically.
Right.
The results come back. We've only really been using it for a week now, so in fact it was amazing how quickly you got onto it. But eventually we will have sort of complicated scoring, so that some Turkers get better scores than others, and so we can actually have them sort of self-policing.
Yeah.
At the moment, we're just running all the data through a couple of times and using it, and then throwing out bad Turk data automatically. Then it comes in, and then we do the triangulation to turn that into GPS coordinates.
Right. I was going to ask, do you do that with yellow lines as well?
Yep.
Because then you can look down and see where all the yellow lines are.
Yep. We've actually, yellow lines is something that we'd like to be able to do automatically, and this is actually our automatic detection, which is working pretty well already. So even though we've got tasks up on Mechanical Turk to do yellow lines, it's something that in the long run, or very short term, we will be doing automatically, so we have some problems there. But
it's looking for yellowish things on the side of the road, and it picked up the grass.
And it has some problems at this stage, because this is a sort of low-level image detection stage. We have ways of throwing out that grass detection.
Right. Have you used any of the Mechanical Turk stuff to train your algorithms?
Not yet, but it's on in the pipeline. Certainly, we would. It's actually a very classic problem in computer vision, is getting enough training data. And it looks to me like it's a great way of getting training data. The only trouble is it's not 100% reliable, and as soon as you start to get problems, and you don't want to put those into your training data, because in your train. So if I tell Turkers to go and find me drain pipes or drains in the road, and I tell them slightly wrong, or they slightly misunderstand. A lot of the Turkers are in America, and so their drains look different from ours.
I was going to say, because you use American language on your...
Well, that was deliberate, because most of them are Americans at the moment. Something like bollards, they don't have bollards at all in America.
Right.
And so in order to get the Americans to accurately click on bollards, you have to tell them very carefully what a bollard is, so they don't make a mistake.
It seems a real shame that Amazon are so US-focused. Like, you can't even set up a Mechanical Turk task unless you have a US bank address.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of people saying I would hope that they're going to expand. Yeah, I don't know. It would be nice. We've got a US company, so we can. I have no clue what their long term plans are. So anyway, sort of going back to the pipeline, then Amazon results come in, and you can then turn it into GPS location.
Does the van just have one camera?
No, it's got six.
Right. Do any of them look down or up or in interesting locations?
They're currently configured to... We've got two frontward-looking, sort of just standard, looking down the road, two backwards-looking down the road, so we don't have to drive every road both directions, and two looking sideways and down. So that's aimed to get things like drains on the side of the road and those tiny no parking signs that they put up.
Oh, the little
on
ones.
Tiny little ones. We all reconfigure as our needs change, or probably rather than reconfigure, add more cameras, because it's better to generate more data than to risk not having enough data.
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as we find something that we can't do with our current setup, we'll add more cameras. And there's big requirements for things like road inspection, actual road surface inspection, so mm-hmm. it's very likely that we would add a camera looking at the road in the near future. Let me show you. So this is just an example of how you, once you've detected objects, so what you've got here is, this is the original video.
Yeah.
And this is actually a completely automated signpost detection.
Right.
And so whenever it sees a signpost, it basically shoots out a ray from the camera. And then once you've got enough of those rays, you just intersect them, and that gives you a GPS location. And so this is.
And the more rays, the more accurate the more location.
The more rays, the more accurate. And actually, if you go back, so we're getting really very accurate location, because we're triangulating from, in this case, probably, I don't know, maybe 10 cameras. So 10 frames are giving us a really good location, and we're getting the location is significantly better than the actual original accuracy of the GPS. So it's actually, because it's sort of triangulated from multiple frames, it's actually more accurate than the original data.
So have you overlaid this stuff on top of MasterMap?
It works incredibly well. You can actually look at, you can see the points right in the centre of the. We had some good examples, in fact, in this video, where there's a signpost on the central reservation, and the central reservation is on MasterMap, and you can see it right in the centre.
That's nice.
And also, we're finding that in some cases MasterMap's not as good as it. Well, it's as good as it claims to be, but it's not as good as people hope it is.
Yeah.
Because they claim is, what does they claim? It's 50 centimetres, isn't it, or is it less? 10.
I don't actually know.
Their claim is higher than it is on typically. They're probably typically better than they claim to be. That's then really, in most cases, the last step. They'll get given GPS location as a side product of the either the automatic detection or the Amazon Turk people will be able to get things like quality of the sign. So if it's dirty, then we'll mark it up as it was dirty.
Yeah.
And then they will get a quality measure in their database.
Yeah.
That's it really. And then you start getting to the point where you can.
And then you sell it.
you can have every street sign in England.
Yeah. It seems like quite a forward-thinking thing to do, to use Amazon Mechanical Turk to do this stuff. And I think most of the companies I've ever dealt with would be scared, or would need an awful lot of convincing before they let their precious data, or even try to use something like this. So how did it come about?
Well, there's no precious data really, that we're only giving individual Turkers get a few frames, and that's not a particularly valuable resource.
Yeah.
Point A. Point B, there's a lot of steps before and after the Mechanical Turk, so even if you were to steal our images, they would probably be of no use to you.
Yeah.
But actually, in response to your question, we're just a small company, and we are, particularly within geospatial vision, we're really trying to move forward very fast and build up something that really is quite revolutionary. And Mechanical Turk was started out as a trial, and it was actually significantly better than I had originally predicted. In fact, my original test with Mechanical Turk, I just went in and I just thought I'd just try it out, and I put up a question saying, how many miles of road are there in the US? Within about 20 minutes, it came back with two responses. And so then I wanted to go and see whether they were actually correct, and it took me about 25 minutes to surf the web and find out the exact answer. And both of them were correct.
Right.
So then our next step was putting up some street light detection code. So we just said, mark all the street lights in this video sequence. And in fact, if you search around the web, you'll find I posted the results on the web, and I was absolutely amazed at the results. They were just so much better than anything I'd ever imagined could come out. Then we sort of made the decision to try it for a few months and see what happens. If it fails, we've actually, in the course of putting together the Mechanical Turk processes, we've created ourselves some user interfaces that are particularly easy to use. So if Mechanical Turk completely fails, we'll just move to India and do the processing over there using the same user interfaces and the same infrastructure. So it's not an enormous risk, really.
Right.
It's it's more just really exciting to see what happens, what comes out.
So it seems there's quite a lot of there's like a community aspect around Mechanical Turk. Mm. Have you really hit that at all?
Oh, very much. Yeah, we have. I'm getting 30, 40 emails a day. We've taken the policy actually of trying to get quite involved in that community. There's a thing called, I don't know whether you've ever seen Turk a Nation. We've made a big deal about trying to be very active in that community because we believe that it's worthwhile in the long term. I know some of the requesters on Mechanical Turk just put up their tasks and expect them to get done, and they probably are getting done. I don't know whether we're getting them done any faster or so, it's difficult to tell, but it's certainly something that we want because it's good. Well, it's also good publicity. I believe that if we keep in with the community, then the community will help us in the long term.
Yeah.
It's not really that different from having employees of your company, really. One of the Mechanical Turks, you get these little emails, they can fill in a feedback form or a contact form, and one of them said, it's really great to be working for your company. which is good, because it obviously means that they believe that they're a valued part of our company.
Mm-hmm.
And because we're paying them, we expect the quality of the data to be good, and so we're not going to get rubbish.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was my fear, is that so often on the internet you'll get 10% good results and 80%, 90% absolute rubbish. But Mechanical Turk seems to be the case that it's not that way. And I'm not really sure. I don't completely understand why, because the amount of money that they're being paid is quite low.
I think it's just such an interesting task compared to all the podcast transcriptions and answer this stupid question type of thing.
Yeah, I wonder though, if that's the case, then you would expect that it will get boring after a while. So that's a concern for us, that people will get bored.
Yeah.
I would actually prefer that people were doing it for the money than because it's interesting, because we can't keep them interested indefinitely. If we want them to be doing it in a year's time, we've got to keep them there through money rather than just interest. So it's not really that exciting.
So how do you keep your drivers motivated? Lots of beer.
Yeah. if you saw the van, actually, it's quite exciting, most of the drivers have previously been driving trucks around the country. And they'd be much more interested in driving this van than driving a truck.
Right.
It's quite high tech and it looks fun. And there's six PCs in the back of the van and all sorts of stuff. So it's really it's quite an exciting thing to be doing if you're a driver.
Yeah.
And it's not motorway driving most of the time either, which is good because.
So it's not monotonous. It's
a bit more interesting.
Yeah.
We haven't had any crashes yet either, which is a good thing to do. We're very much building up our infrastructure. We're not by any means at the end of what we're hoping for Mechanical Turk, assuming that over the next month or so it scales as we want it to.
Is there a sense that in the same way that you scale your computing power with EC2, you're scaling your human resources dynamically with Mechanical Turk?
Oh, I hope so. That's what Amazon believe, and right. That's what we... I read, and I'm wondering where I read it. I read just the other day that it is considered that there's Amazon have storage, Elastic Cloud, and Mechanical Turk, and the thing that they have in common is if infinitely scalable automated resources, whether it's human or not.
Mm-hmm.
Only time will tell, or Amazon, they probably know how well it will scale, but they're not going to tell us.
what's the histogram look like of people's time? Is it mostly people just spending 5 minutes at lunchtime, or is it people sitting all day?
I haven't looked at it recently, and I think it might have changed a little bit since we had a bit of publicity. But after the first few days, it was about 50% was done by constant, the same people, a bunch maybe 100 people or so. So 50% was done were people who had done more than 10 tasks. And then the rest were, there's a massive amount of people who do one and never do another. And then there's the rest are probably somewhere between.
So it sounds like it's scale-free.
Sorry?
It sounds like a scale-free graph.
Why do you say
just
that?
Just the way you describe it, because it doesn't sound like a normal distribution. It sounds like you've got lots of people doing one, and then a few people doing lots, and then bulk in between. It sounds like a scale-free graph.
Well, no, because we've got 50% doing... Well, 50% of our tasks have been done by a very small number of people, and if that doesn't scale... So if those people, so it might be that there's 10 people in the US who are actually willing to do these tasks constantly,
mm-hmm.
and they might all be, because of the nature of those people, they might already all be on Mechanical Turk,
mm-hmm.
and so it might be that you'll never find another 10 people. And I think it's quite likely that the sort of people who want to constantly do these repetitive tasks are probably already getting close to Mechanical Turk. So I don't think you necessarily... Yes, it will scale indefinitely.
Do you get any idea from... I don't know what it looks like from your end of Mechanical Turk, but do you get any idea of where people are?
The only way I really know is the people who've submitted feedback. And actually, a remarkably large number of those are non-US. And as far as I can tell, I haven't really looked into it, but as far as I can tell, if you're a non-US worker, you can only spend the money on Amazon. You can't get the money as cash.
Yeah.
I'd say about 50% are non-US. And certainly looking at the usage graphs over the time zones, it's almost constant throughout the day. It drops off a little bit at early morning UK, which would be when the whole of the US is asleep. But the rest of the day it's pretty much constant,
right.
Which suggests that it's evenly distributed. What we'd be particularly excited about is if they move to India, China, emerging markets, really. That would be quite exciting. This is nice. A few billion people over there.
Yes.
Although...
Who'd be much more willing to work for 10 cents or 50 frames than...
Yeah, although the question is, if they're willing to work for 10 cents and the US people aren't willing to work for 10 cents, then the US people might be pushed out of the market.
Yeah.
Which might hurt. It might sort of equalise that you always have the bottom end of the pay spectrum doing work, and the other people are not willing to do it for that small amount. But in fact, I think there's a large number of people who are not doing it for the money, and they're doing it for interest. I don't know. One guy emailed us and said, it's better doing your tasks than playing Minesweeper.